spokesman for the president of Burundi, Pierre Nkurunziza. Welcome to the program, Jean-Claude.
Thank you very much indeed.
You know, the principal reason we're pleased to be talking to you is that your country, Burundi, is in the media here in Toronto and certainly in the major capitals of the West. But most of the reporting is very slighting of your government. That is to say, it's very hard to get a clear view of the position of the Burundi government. And I wonder, so I'd like to cover a couple of three questions with you that are talked about in Canadian and American media, beginning with the matter of what type of crisis, if there is a crisis, is taking place in Burundi today. We hear a lot of discussion about your constitution and the question of the two terms for the president. Could you talk about that, the point of view of the Burundian government?
Right. The issue around the candidacy of His Excellency Pierre Nkurunziza, the president of the Republic of Burundi, for the 2015 presidential election, what people should bear in mind here is that in any democracy, every political party has the right to nominate its candidate. Whatever happened in connection with the president Nkurunziza's candidacy, people should refrain from blaming him for running, and this does not mean that his nominating party, the CNDD-FDD, should take the blame. Mm-hmm. Prior to the CNDD-FDD National Convention held on April 25, 2015, the party asked its members from the grassroots to the top whom they should present as the candidate. And according to a survey carried out by the party, Mr. Pierre Nkurunziza's name was repeated in all the nooks and crannies of the country. It is normal that some members of the opposition parties and some civil society organizations oppose that choice, especially in as much they fear his proven popularity. But people taking the path of violence, barricading the road to prevent other citizens to go about their daily routines, preventing learners to attend schools, creating disorders in some parts of the capital city, burning vehicles of those law-abiding citizens who are going at work, burning houses belonging to members of the ruling party and two police officers, and even brutally killing those accused of being members of the youth wing in Bonerakure is, in my opinion, totally unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And finally, it should be stressed here that Mr. Nkurunziza's candidacy complied with the Constitution of the Republic of Burundi, and this is very important.
Yeah. You know, what I think of, I don't understand why particularly Western capitals don't respect either the sovereignty of your country or the Constitution, but most importantly, your Supreme Court. The American Supreme Court had a constitutional issue when Mr. Gore and Mr. Bush had a contest, and it was largely believed that Mr. Gore had won the election, but the court said no, and that was the end of the subject. We didn't have people trying to assassinate people or burn buildings, and that's because there was a decision by the highest court in the country.
Well, personally, I don't also understand why people can behave that way. Mm-hmm. Regarding this decision by the, it's not in my country, we talk about constitutional court, not Supreme Court.
I see.
But
yeah.
As the candidacy of His Excellency Nkurunziza was raising controversy within both the national and international opinions, a group of Burundian MPs asked the Constitutional Court of the Republic of Burundi to rule on that issue. In my book, there was no better sure way than seeking interpretation by the court. And the Constitutional Court of Burundi judged that President Nkurunziza could run as a candidate for election 2015. As a matter of ground, judges of the court used the Constitution of 2005, which derives itself from the Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation, concluded on 28th of August 2000. Mm-hmm. And the Global Ceasefire Agreement, which was signed on the 16th November 2003, they also took inspiration from the National Unity Charter, celebrated every year on the 5th of February. There was a persistent confusion. There was a persistent confusion around Article 96 and Article 302 of the Constitution, prompting a heated debate, contradictory interpretations, and even speculation, leading some protagonists to argue that 2015 general elections in Burundi should be postponed. Mm-hmm. The Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation, which was signed by 17 political parties and the government, comprises reservations by 10 signatory parties. Those reservations are part and parcel of the Arusha Agreement, especially, among others, the mode of election and the president of the republic and the transition period. Mm-hmm. Does the ruling of the Constitutional Court violate the Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation? The answer is no, not at all, because the government resulting from the 2015 and the one resulting from 2010 general election has demonstrated strong will, commitment, and the resolve to implement the letter and the spirit of the Arusha Agreement. Mm-hmm. It should be stressed here that the Arusha Agreement was sharply improved by the Global Ceasefire Agreement, which was signed in 2003 in Pretoria, South Africa, between the transitional government and the CNDD-FDD as a combating movement at that time. Mm-hmm. At this juncture, I want to conclude this question. At this juncture, it is important to highlight that the Global Ceasefire Agreement was signed without reservation. Mm-hmm. And this has caused some provisions of the Arusha Agreement to be taken up by event. Today, the two agreements, I mean, the Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation and the Global Ceasefire Agreement are now an integral part of the Constitution and they have equal treatment and the consideration.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's been remarkable that there has been the implementation. And incidentally, all the international observers and other parties agreed that the process had been implemented. Is that true?
Can you ask the question again?
It's been, I think, acknowledged by most observers, some of them official ones, that it was, that Arusha has been implemented by your government.
Yes, the Arusha Agreement has been implemented by our government. Mm-hmm. And I think the CNDD-FDD government has done better than previous government because mm-hmm. some of the decisions, some of the content of the Arusha were not able to be implemented before. It's like the setup of the CNTB, the National Land Commission, for instance, was not has not been implemented before. But the current government was courageous enough to implement that National Land Commission. Same thing for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which has been implemented by the current government.
Mm-hmm. Well, then. Let's,
I think we've done better.
Yes, you're coming through very clear. Thank you very much. Now, I want to ask you, too, your country, of course, experienced, not only did you have this constitutional debate and then to set the schedule for the election, but somebody in the military attempted a coup in your country. Can you tell us what was that? What was their intention and who was supporting that?
Right. I think, in my opinion, the attempted coup on May 13 was a continuation of an anti-democratic movement established slightly before the independence of Burundi. We need to understand the root, the roots of this kind of problem. It's not the first time a coup was attempted in Burundi. Actually, the coup was meticulously planned for years, and as a matter of recent fact, I can tell you the attack against Burundi from the Democratic Republic of the Congo at the end of 2014. Mm-hmm. People arrested following that attack declared that their mission was to overthrow democratically elected institutions and prevent elections of 2015 from happening. Those people have supporters inside and outside the country, outside Burundi. Mm-hmm. They have people of different backgrounds who help and abet them. They are still there at work, and they are backed by some pseudo-political parties which do not have militants on the ground, but mm-hmm. which are clever enough to force a transition in order to reap what they have not sown. They try by all means to deceive the international opinion. The coup was a culmination of a series of operations. Without being exhaustive, let me tell you some of the shameful operations to illustrate the fact of the existence of an undemocratic movement in Burundi. Number one, in 2010, following their defeat in local elections, opposition parties withdrew from subsequent elections, citing electoral fraud, which unfortunately they have never been able to prove, mm-hmm. as all observers at both ends of the spectrum, I mean here observers, local observers, international observers, declared that the 2010 elections were credible and up to international standards. Mm-hmm. Among them was the UN Secretary General himself, Ban Ki-moon, who visited Burundi just days after municipal election. Number two, following the undemocratic move to withdraw from 2010 electoral process, opposition parties repeatedly undermined the country's security by resorting to violence and terror. Different ruling party offices were set ablaze across the country, and the grenades were thrown into public venues. Most of the time, they were targeting members of the ruling party. Furthermore, some of the above-mentioned opposition leaders and their members were cited by various United Nations expert reports as part of regional negative forces, especially in the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. This attitude proved that these parties were never prepared to rule the country through the ballot box, but by weapons. Number three, with the help of private media, the opposition is in a stinging attack against the ruling party in general and against its youth wing in particular. The campaign to demonize and slander the ruling party has no other aim than cutting the ruling party off its most important part of electorate, namely the youth. Last but not least, through different letters and media interviews, some political actors and leaders of the opposition political parties have demonstrated since 2013 that they were not preparing for election in 2015. Mm-hmm. Consequently, during voter registration, opposition leaders have blown hot and cold in urging the supporters not to register to vote, but later they soundly requested an extension of the registration period for the supporter to register when they realized that the electoral process was going on normally. You can see from the above that these people were, in their mind, they were plotting something like a coup d'etat or like transition. They have never been ready for election.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Jean-Claude Denzako, who is the assistant spokesperson for the president of Burundi. On this matter of the so-called independent radios, I was doing my homework for this, and I noticed that a very important French intellectual figure, a man who is described as a billionaire, Bernard-Henri Lévy, he is, and a second person, Samantha Power, who's the American ambassador to the United Nations, both are involved with what they call NGO radio in your country. What I notice about both of them is they're not only – they call themselves human rights activists, but in fact, they also are, are known to be advocates of regime change. And I'm really quite surprised that they had those stations. And if am I right that one of the military people involved in the attempted coup went to their radio stations, one of their radio stations, to broadcast? Is that the correct picture?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. What we call here in Burundi, Radio Public Africaine or African Public Radio, which is owned by some of the shareholders in that business, include Samantha Power, who is the current permanent representative of the United States of America in the United Nations.
You know, that would not be allowed in Canada. They wouldn't allow it in the United States. If you and I tried to set up a radio station, they would tell us no.
Well, she invested in that business, she was not she was not holding that position. Maybe that's the reason why. But what I want to say here, I would like to talk about the role of these outside parties, such as the NGOs. You know, in Burundi, and I think this is the case in some other African countries, outside parties play a significant part in the crisis, and especially in Burundi. The crisis Burundi is currently faced with, there is a significant part of the outside parties. Local NGOs, for instance, are nowhere near enough what we can expect from a non-government organization or a civil society organization. The reason is maybe because they are managed by former politicians who definitely need time to change and understand and adapt to the new roles. This may take many years or simply not happen if the sponsors from Western countries maintain the same attitude towards the government of Burundi, because we have realized that Western countries, some international organizations help these civil society organizations and put the blame to the government as if the government is totally or always wrong, which is not the case.
Certainly not. There's a today's news is a good example of the kinds of things I think Canadians need to hear about. I noticed that the United States ambassador to in Burundi is saying that your country is near a civil war, and that the language and rhetoric is inflamed, and therefore he worries that maybe an intervention is necessary. I want to ask you, first of all, about this thing of language. Your government is accused of using ethnic incitement and demonization. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, this is totally wrong. No government official. But I had some reports accusing people like the head of the state himself, the speaker of the speaker of Senate, the first deputy president, that they have used some some hate speech. This results from poor translation, in my opinion. What they said was said in Kirundi, our native language. So some malicious translators, and most of them are detractors of our government, while they are sitting in Europe. They are meeting these Western decision makers. They told them presidents had said this and that. But I think people should rely on official translation. When the President of the Republic, for instance, delivers a speech, the speech is translated in French and English, and the speeches are posted on the presidency website. Why, instead of relying on these lies from opposition figures, people should not go to the website of the presidency and see what exactly the president or some other people said. Mm-hmm. So no hate speech in Burundi. Mm-hmm.
And well, definitely that is an issue, by the way, language and also simple respect for the existing government and its and what it actually says, as opposed to, as you say, interpretations. It must be a concern to you and to your government that ambassadors and others who have seem to have an interest themselves speak in an inflammatory way. I mean, it's certainly inflammatory to say that you're on the brink of a civil war. That can't be helpful, can it?
Well, you know, people may have opinions, and opinions may be wrong or right. So when people say that maybe there are some hidden economic interests, mm-hmm. people may hide themselves behind economic interests and raise an alarm saying that Burundi is in the brink of civil war, mm-hmm. there is a genocide in preparation. But so far, no one has been able to come up with proof, with evidence to show that there is a preparation of for genocide. So mm-hmm. Here, what I would like to add is the recent discussion of Burundi at the United Nations. Well, mm-hmm. this discussion was initiated by France and Belgium in one way or another. And the discussion led to the United Nations Security Council adopting a resolution. In the framework of that resolution, the United Nations Secretary General recently rushed Mr. Jamal Ben Omar to Bujumbura. Once back at the United Nations headquarters, Jamal Ben Omar, Under Secretary General and the Special Advisor, briefed the United Nations Security Council, and he didn't tell them that it was a genocide in preparation. They conclude that finally they decided that a small team of experts to facilitate political dialogue between the government, the opposition, instead of a peacekeeping mission or anything else whatsoever, should be deployed in Burundi. Uh-huh. So you understand that there was genocide in preparation. If there was inflammatory speech, Jamal Ben Omar should have told the United Nations Security Council.
Yes. Yes, the Security Council took a very reasonable non-interventionist approach. Am I right?
Sorry?
I said they chose, their position was they heard the report, they were satisfied with that, and they did not entertain or vote for any ideas about attempting to intervene or setting new goals or changing the terminology in terms of the status of Burundi.
Yeah, well, according to the recent discussion at the United Nations, when they adopted the resolution, well, among scenario, among alternatives, there was an idea of sending a peacekeeping mission in Burundi. Mm-hmm. But in the framework of that resolution, after the briefing by Mr. Jamal Ben Omar, once back from Bujumbura, it was decided that a small team of experts, uh-huh. instead of a peacekeeping mission, should be sent to Burundi to facilitate political dialogue between the government and the opposition instead of sending a peacekeeping mission.
Yeah.
So Burundi is happy about the move and will continue its efforts towards peace and security consolidation.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that. I want to ask you, too, and again, we're speaking to Jean-Claude Nzako, who is the assistant spokesperson for the president of Burundi. And the president of Uganda, Museveni, has also been engaged on this issue of some of the political questions in your country. What is the status of that? And how are also the other African states in your region responding to your to the debates that are going on in Burundi?
Right. There have been different summits of East African Community head of states, and one of the summits decided to appoint His Excellency Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, President of the Republic of Uganda, to facilitate in Burundian dialogue. Mm-hmm. So we took note and act of that. President Museveni has visited Burundi in July and met different government officials. He met some political party leaders, civil society, church leaders, and other decision makers in Burundi. And when he left, he sent his Minister of Defense to continue facilitate the inter-Burundian dialogue. And here, something new is that in addition to these efforts to facilitate dialogue between Burundian actors, there is also the establishment of an inter-Burundian dialogue which will help Burundians to discuss, to try to solve the problems from the root. And, well, we are happy with this regional initiative. And all East African Community countries are behind that initiative. And I think it will complement the inter-Burundian dialogue. And it will be very helpful to restore peace and trust among Burundians.
Mm-hmm. Well, we really appreciate all this information. By the way, could you tell us, we'll just wind up with this, your country has been at peace now since the end of your Civil War, and I guess the assumption in taking the presidency by Mr. Nkurunziza. And basically, your country, except for somebody's attempt through assassinations, whatnot, attempt to destabilize, but actually, the country is quite stable as far as I can see.
You mean people attempting to assassinate?
No, well, I say that there have been we read about that sort of thing, but the country itself seems to be basically at peace. The population on the whole has no comes and goes and does goes about their business, right? You simply have an element that not reconciled to the president. Is that right?
Well, if you look at the whole population of Burundi in general, they are all behind the president. So no problem with the population. The president himself is, for time being, touring the country, meeting armed forces, police officers, and mingling with the population, the community development works, mm-hmm. and well, nothing has changed. He still enjoys his popularity among the people of Burundi.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad we talked to you. I wish that there was a regular outlet in English language available in Canada, because the pictures we get from the editorials and statements from the New York and Paris, I think, are highly confusing. And your account to us has been very helpful. Jean-Claude Zenzako, I'm very grateful,
yes.
And I hope we can again speak to you again sometime.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking to you, and feel free to speak to me anytime you want to.
Thank you very much. We will definitely do that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. By the way, are you there, Jean?
There we are. That's the interview. We're done with the spokesman for the Burundian president, and we are very grateful. And I, Phil, you remarked, we live in Canada. We read editorials about Burundi telling them what they must do, and we also read articles about Burundi. I see them in New York Times, elsewhere. The gentleman that we just spoke to is never spoken to or cited.
You know, the people who write the articles are not in Burundi either. They write them from Paris or from London.
Yeah, and by the way, they're always identified.
Yeah.
as this little warm puppy called human rights activists. Yeah. And they all seem to agree with the U.S. State Department and very often with the U.S. Pentagon. And they are often paid by people who actually are employed by the Pentagon and the State Department. And but that is not brought into it. I recall when the bombing of Libya began, there was a crisis meeting at the White House, and they were talking about who was attending. And the representative of Human Rights Watch was at the meeting when they were bombing Libya. He was invited.
Well, he was elected by the Libyan people.
And so I guess I don't know.
That's his, yeah.
I suppose he was Colonel somebody.
Yeah.